Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk some football with the professor, John Clayton. If you guys have questions for John, text your questions in right now. 710-710 is the text line. We'll try to get to some of your questions before we let John go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Well, I guess the Julio Jones story comes to an end. He is now a member of the Tennessee Titans. What do you think about what they gave up for him?
Yeah, I think that they outbid everybody else because I don't know if anybody was even offering anything more than a number two pick, and I'm sure other teams are offering a three because, I mean, what, 21 teams, and again, there weren't 21 teams involved in this, and we couldn't afford the $15.3 million cap hit or, you know, that you would take in making this trade. And so Tennessee had more of a need because they lose Corey Davis and a tight end, Juno Smith, to the New York Jets. And so, you know, they're sitting there with Josh Reynolds, the former Ram. They're sitting there with a real good one in A.J. Brown. And they could have used, you know, somebody like a Julio Jones. But I think that there was no way there was going to be a number one pick because, you know, with that salary, with that contract, you know, $20 million, $22 million a year, you're not going to get a number one, plus the fact he's 32 years old. I know the Pro Football Focus gave him the eighth best rating among wide receivers, which is still probably fair, even though last year he missed seven games, but still caught 51 passes and averaged over 14 yards a carry. But no, I thought it was a fair trade for both. I thought that, you know, where Tennessee was going to check the boxes that Atlanta was going to make the trade is, number one, Atlanta did not have to pay a dime, you know, of that contract. Mm. And so they were able to clear the $7.55 million that they need for their draft choices. You know, number two, that, you know, you got more value than a number, just a second round pick, because now you get a fourth round pick in 2023, and you do get a sixth rounder back from Atlanta. But no, I thought it was fair. And, you know, now you look at Tennessee and Indy, that's a pretty good battle for that division.
Yeah, so John, 206 asking the question, do you think that the Seahawks said they were in this trade and all the trade talk just to appease Russell Wilson?
No.
Yeah, where do you think they...
I mean, remember, John Snyder does this all the time.
Right.
He gets himself involved in just about every deal to keep his knowledge of trades and keep his knowledge of where things are going in this league. So it's like, it had nothing to do with Russell Wilson. I'm sure Russell would have liked him, but you know, you can see how upset Russell was that he got boarded a plane and flew up here and now is taking part in the OTAs.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and if you could rank, where do you think, if there was 10 teams that were interested, where would the Seahawks rank?
I'd say maybe
behind San Francisco, behind
San
the
Francisco.
Rams.
Yeah, but, well, you know, the Rams had no chance. They don't have the cap room to be able to do it.
Well, somebody said, tell Jalen Ramsey that. Apparently he's upset that they didn't get him.
Oh, is he going to ask to be traded like he did in Jacksonville?
Yeah. Well, if they trade him, then yeah. Man,
there you go. So it's like, hey, Jalen, chill, okay? But no, I think that, they were probably third or fourth. Apparently New England, they were a little gun-shy on it. I know that, again, the price and the fact that they've already got, three pass catchers making over $10 million a year. You know, they have the cap room to be able to do it, but I think that didn't make much sense to do it. And, the Rams, they were tighter against the cap than the Seahawks. Seahawks had $6.8 million, but I don't know if they would even offer a second-round pick. You know, maybe they're snooping around hoping it was going to be a third or fourth-round pick, and then you really start to seriously think about it.
So, John, where does that receiving tandem rank for you now with Julio Jones there, with A.J. Brown, and obviously we love DK mm-hmm. and Tyler out here, and how does that stack up? How would you sort of rank where they fit amongst the best?
They probably move somewhere in the top six, maybe a little higher than that, you know, because I like the Denver Broncos at number six. I mean, clearly, I know the Pro Football Focus just did this last week, and, you know, they had Kansas City naturally number one. They had Denver number six. So I guess the question is that...
They were just doing tandems or like the
trio,
whole...
Trios. Okay, because what pulls them down is a tight end position because... they pretty much have an undrafted tight end filling in for Juno Smith, who ended up going to the Jets. And that's, he's kind of an unknown. So they still need to get a tight end. So that'll pull down their whole pass catching core. But still, for, you know, three receivers, they've got to be somewhere in that top seven or eight.
Hey, John, this story, very interesting. The offensive tackle who tore his Achilles, Juwan James, signs a two-year deal, $3.5 million deal with the Ravens, and then he filed a $15 million grievance. So what are the Broncos going to end up looking bad to prospective free agents going forward? Tell us how this whole thing is breaking down. Did he do something that was maybe risky that we don't know about? There's a lot around this story that it seems like that we don't know.
Well, there's a lot we know, because what happened was that he blew out his Achilles tendon while doing a boycott.
But do we know what he was doing? I mean, was he just
working out?
He was just working out. It wasn't like he was on an ATV or anything like that.
But again, it's like if you work out away from the facility, the team has the option, if they did, and they certainly did, to put the non-football injury list, because it's a non-football injury that he suffered because it was away from the facility. And so now what you end up doing, and this is where I think he makes the mistake, and I wonder how they bring this up once they have the grievance, is that, remember, he opted out last year because of COVID-19, which, of course, perfectly in his right to be able to do that. Because, I counted yesterday, there was 71 players who opted out. There's only 32 right now that are with the teams that they opted out from, only 32, which I find amazing. It's like, if you opted out, you may be out. But see, the double problem for him, because he signed a four-year, $51 million contract, is that he only had three games because of a knee injury in his first year after signing the contract in 2019. He only took part in 63 plays. So then he opts out, which, again, is his perfect right to do it. But you would figure, after opting out and hardly playing for 2 years, it might not be a bad idea to be in the team facility trying to take care of your body. Because, again, he's only had 63 plays now, what would be 3 years. And, he's a big guy, obviously, 320-some pounds and all that stuff. And so I'm wondering if they bring that up into grievance. Because, again, it's like, if you're the Broncos, and he's like, wait a second, we just spent $51 million on a contract for this guy, and he's collected all this money, and he's I know he got the guarantee, $10 million base guarantee, and there's another $5 million in there. It's like, no, we're not going to pay it, because, again, he's done nothing for this team in the 3 years, and he put himself in a bad position by not training with the team. You don't know if you got the exact way to take care of your body.
Okay, so tell us about the grievance process and how likely you think Williams is to win this one.
I mean, as a player, how many guys...
Or James, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you've been through this and through the years. How many times have you seen a player win a grievance like this? Not often. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're usually pretty loose because, again, it's so stacked up, because it's a clear-cut thing that if you suffer an injury away from the facility, I don't care what the reason is. I mean, you can say, for example, Mark Garagos, his attorney, one of the great attorneys in this country, said that, Colorado law, the Broncos don't comply to Colorado law as far as the COVID-19. Well, if they don't comply to COVID-19 laws, why do they have 70 players working at the facility and nobody's stopping them? I mean, that to me is a weak excuse. And so you can start bringing all these weak excuses, but it's really hard to overturn an employment grievance for the player to win, because the team, particularly in this case, has a lot. And again, I don't know how much they're going to allow as far as the conversation about, the COVID-19. And again, not because of COVID-19, but the fact that he wasn't here last year. He stayed away from the team. And now here he's away from the team, on the boycott, because he just wanted to honor that. And it's like, I just wonder if they bring that up, because, again, he put himself in a very difficult position. I mean, my way of thinking, if you are a guy that ends up opting out, you probably need to be in the facility to be able to at least, get your body right, because you haven't had any doctors look at you other than your own. You haven't had any trainers work with you. I mean, all those different things haven't happened now. And now this would have been, the beginning of the second year.
Okay, so I'm sorry, real quick, who presides over this whole process as far as
I don't know in this case it's going to be an independent, but usually it's somebody from the league office.
Okay.
And because, you know, it kind of curiously, Garagos did put in his filing that the Players Association is not involved in this one. And so, so it's probably one of the ex-players who's working for the league office.
710-710 is the Mac and Jacks text line. If you've got questions for John Clayton, you can text those in. And one of them in relation to this story, John, was asking the hypothetical. I know how you hate these, but play along. So we've seen video after video of Russell Wilson on his field that he's got out there in San Diego, big logo on it, whole thing. And he's got DK Metcalf down there and other players with him down there. What if somebody down there, DK or somebody blows out their knee or Russell gets hurt? Are they in the same position as the guy we're talking about with Denver?
Mm-hmm. Same position, yeah. I mean, the difference being is that, because one of the reasons they did this is because of the $10 million guarantee. Well, there's a slight guarantee in the second round deal for Metcalf. Obviously, there's big guarantees for Russell and all that stuff, but it would be the same thing. I mean, you have to evaluate how much you want the player and obviously how good the player is. And like, for example, it would have been a Russell Wilson. They weren't going to do anything to him because, he's so important to this team. I mean, as much as they stood by Juwan James, by bringing him back after missing pretty much two seasons, and they didn't draft a tackle, which I thought they would, that they stood by him, and all of a sudden, boom, there goes the Achilles, and there he goes, and that means 3 years at 63 plays.
So if they're in the team's good graces, essentially, they'll pay him their money, and this guy was not in the team's good graces.
No. I mean, and you can understand why, because it's like they paid $12.75 million a year for the guy, and he's got 63 plays in three games in 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's 21 plays a game, a year.
Hmm.
21 plays.
Yeah. Hey, John, for Bruce Arians and Jason Light down in Tampa Bay, new contracts for them. I saw Football Life on Bruce Arians, and my view of him has changed. He's gone a lot of different places and been, in a lot of different programs, and he's just been a grinder, but did a really good job in Tampa, and do you have any idea what the numbers are? What does a guy like Bruce Arians get paid?
Yeah, no idea what the numbers are. Too early because he just got the deal done. But, I mean, you can see how elated ownership is. And I say this, having just did a story for the Washington Post on the Bucs being able to keep all their players from the Super Bowl. And so I spent a lot of time talking to Jason Light last week. And, as soon as I got done with the interview, they took seven of their front office execs, and they all got promoted to different and more positive titles. So they all got raises. Here's Jason Light. He gets a bump up. In fact, I don't know how many years he's going to sign for, but apparently he signed a multi-year deal. In the case of Bruce, I mean, Bruce goes year to year, and he deserved. So, I mean, you can just see that the ownership is so delighted with the season that they had. Season ticket sales are busting like crazy. I mean, the only bad thing that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have right now is they're still not allowed to fire the cannon. Fire the cannon! So they can't do that.
Why?
Kind of a county thing more than anything else. I mean, the county's not letting them do it. They want to fire the cannon because that's one of the big things that they do. But I guess, with the pandemic and everything else, they decided, no, we can't do that. Can't fire the cannon. But,
I don't get the connection.
They have that big boat up there.
Yeah.
In
No. I know what that is. I don't get the connection to the pandemic and firing the cannon.
No, again, it's like, I mean, there's restrictions on so many things, and that became one of the restrictions, and so far they've not opened it up yet. Now, maybe with the fact that they're going to probably have full crowds and everything else, maybe they'll do it. Maybe they're worried about safety reasons and stuff like that. But so far, I've not found any Tampa Bay Buck fan that got hit with anything that was in that cannon.
There's no cannonballs coming out of there?
No.
They're not firing them directly into the crowd? That's
no.
Weird.
I'll tell you the cannon that they should get rid of. Well, they probably don't have it anymore.
Yeah, they don't have it anymore.
Remember the one in the Chargers?
Oh
my God.
Oh.
John, you and I think we're down there. I don't know about you. I jumped every time. It just used to startle the heck out of me.
Oh, agreed. I did. It was the same
hated
for me, too.
Thing.
Oh, it was awful.
Oh, and you were down on the sidelines, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it is brutal.
John was the one firing it.
No. I would have fired the guy who was lighting the
Yeah.
Hey, John, I saw in relation to the Bucs here, I just saw this story about their rookie cornerback that they signed, Cameron Kinley. He's in the Navy. Mm-hmm. And he put in a request to delay his U.S. Navy commission. That's been denied, apparently. They said he's required by the Navy to commission as an ensign. I'm not sure what that means, but mm-hmm. is not permitted to appeal the decision, which was not explained. And just sounds like a big bummer for this kid.
Yeah.
He released a statement, says, spent the past week processing my emotions. It's very difficult to have been this close to achieving a childhood dream and have it taken away from me. He also said he hopes the situation will soon be overturned and I can get back to competing on the field and representing the U.S. Navy. Kind of a different dynamic, obviously, than anybody coming out of a regular college.
Yeah, and it's like I feel bad for him, but I guess rules are rules, and sometimes they're bent and sometimes they're not. In this case, they weren't going to bend the rules for him, and so he's stuck.
By the way, we have a Red Sox-Miami game going on, and our buddy Russ Simber, who was a big part of this.
Well, how do you know there's a Red Sox game going on?
Just guessing, John.
You've got
guessing.
A TV now?
I'm not really saying one way or
you've
the other.
You've got a TV?
Because I'm afraid they're going to take it away, John.
Oh,
yeah,
John.
We do have our TV.
Shush, John.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, yeah, keep it under your head.
Okay.
Yeah, but Adam Simber out there throwing.
His son.
How would you describe his release?
He's a submariner.
He's a submariner, officially.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yep.
Anyway, remember Russ Simber that used to record all of our commercials here, John?
Yeah.
And just a huge part of what, you know, we do here at the station. Yeah, his son's out there pitching.
Wow,
right
how about that? That's
cool.
Great.
Yeah. Hey, Britt Reed pleaded not guilty, and he's the son of Andy Reed. That was before the Super Bowl, guilty to DWI charge. If you've been following this, it's kind of tragic for Andy Reid, who is such a nice guy, and I know he's had a couple of problems with his children.
Right, including this Reid, I mean, the one who – so I think
–
I don't think it looks good. I mean, it looks pretty bad. And again, it's natural because, I mean, just about everybody's going to plead not guilty, but at some point he may have to take a plea, but, you know, it's going to be hard for him to get escaping from this.
Yeah.
Hey, as far as Aaron in the headline, Aaron Rodgers not expected to attend Packers minicamp. I don't think anybody's surprised by that. Does that change anything for in terms of urgency of getting him moved out of there? Does it? Do you feel like they're closer to working things out? Where does this stand right now?
Stands same as it is because
nothing's changed.
I mean, in fact, somebody close to the situation came out and basically said the words "nothing's changed" because you know he'll take it into training camp. He'll probably take it into the regular season. He just doesn't want to be there, and unless something changes, I mean, and you know, I don't know if he's listening to any contract negotiations or all. I think I don't know if he's got back from Hawaii yet because he's probably. You know, probably at the moment on his third Mai Tai. So it's like
playing the ukulele,
all those different things. So it's like, you know, at least he's playing, but he's not playing football.
Yeah, I think he was playing the guitar. Did we know that he could play the guitar? I was not aware of that.
Boy, he's multi-talented.
Wow.
Yeah. John, you're going to be attending any of the mini camps out there?
I'm hoping to go Thursday. I can't go tomorrow because Pat has a doctor's appointment, so I have to skip it tomorrow. So I'm hoping to get there Thursday.
Okay, well, good, because I'm hoping to get there Thursday, too. Maybe we can
commiserate
out there,
on
the mound out there, or what do you call it, the berm.
The berm. Yeah.
You're all baseball, man.
Dave is a baseball guy now, John.
Oh, really?
Well, I'm trying to be, John. Did you watch the series over the weekend?
Mariners? I did.
Yeah,
sure did.
It was fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just still amazed with all the injuries. I mean, Kikuchi, fortunately, it didn't turn out to be as bad as it looked. Then, of course, you know, Kyle Lewis last week. I know they're getting a couple guys back, but I thought Logan Gilbert was sensational. Looks like they're closer to getting Graveman back, so that's encouraging.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm being corrected by people with military knowledge. It's Ensign.
Ensign.
I guess
is how you pronounce that.
No, I mispronounced it, not you, John. And apparently that is the, according to multiple texters, the lowest naval officer rank. Same as a second lieutenant in other services, says the 907.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Appreciate the help and the correction there. Is it weird? I find it weird that the headline on the story is that Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson expected to be there for OTAs. I guess it just speaks to where we're at now with the boycott and all that stuff. How noteworthy is it? I guess it was noteworthy when they weren't there because of other teams all showing up, like the 49ers and everything.
Yeah.
And then they've got what, four OTAs left that you guys are going to attend one of them at least.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mandatory is next week, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think people are reading too much into it because, you know, it's not like, you know, they stayed together as a team, you know, more than 50 players not attending and all that stuff. I mean, it was the most in the league. We understand that. But it was time. And so it's like, well, Do you think he was embarrassed by what people were saying about him by not being here? No, not whatsoever. Because if you look at the big picture, last week, Tom Brady, he came in for the first time, and he was one of the most outspoken advocates for even rookies not even being at the OTAs. I mean, he spoke out and said, nobody should be at the OTAs. And all of a sudden, he shows up last week. And so now, all of a sudden, you know, the two leaders on this team, Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner, they show up this week. So at least they get a week in. They get the mini camp next week. And so all that should work out. So I think that, you know, it's just one that he gets a chance to do a little bit of stuff with the offense and then go on vacation in a couple weeks.
Yeah, and John, we were talking about, I think this is going to, you know, we're going to forget once the season starts that, you know, this took place. But the only thing that bothers me is that you read about the 49ers and the Rams, and they have full camps. It sounded like Arizona was kind of going the same way as the Seahawks. The Cardinals, you know, sort of spotty attendance as far as their veterans go. But, you know, that's the only thing that bothered me was reading the quotes from down in San Francisco that they had, what, all but eight of their players there.
But here's the thing that I think is real interesting, because, again, we can talk about Russell not being one of the quarterbacks not here. I mean, did the Patriots have back-to-back Super Bowls? I mean, I know in Brady's last year they went to the Super Bowl and won. Did they go the year before? I'm trying to remember if they did, because if they did, whether they did or they didn't, you know, he was so angry and frustrated, I guess, being around Bill Belichick, that he decided to skip both of the off-season programs. I mean, he would go for the mini camp, but he wouldn't show up for the OTAs. And last year, obviously, nobody was involved in the OTAs. And so, not remembering off the top of my head about 3 years ago, but in the last two Super Bowls, he's not had an OTA. He's not been involved in the off-season program until just this past week.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to check. I know that a couple of years ago, the Patriots lost to the Titans.
Yeah.
Right? Was that 19? Yeah, that was 2019 season.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah, he's won so many. It's hard
but
to
anyway,
keep track
yeah,
of all
I, we
of
can't
them.
Keep anyway. Track of Tom Brady's
yeah,
Super Bowl.
Yeah, he's won a whole bunch, John. Yeah, he's been to a bunch. He's won a bunch.
He's won 7 out of 10.
Yeah, so let's leave that one there. John, we'll talk. Are we talking tomorrow?
No.
What's going on?
Unless it rains,
that's right.
So we'll be talking on Thursday.
Okay. All right, maybe tomorrow, but hopefully Thursday, because that means the Mariners get their games in.
Yes.
All right, John, we'll talk soon.
Thanks, John.
There you go. If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Is Major League Baseball finally fighting back on the illegal substances in baseball? Talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, we'll speak with Brady Henderson at 5:30. Luke Arkins from Prospect Insider will join us at 5. We'll talk some baseball with him. Really good baseball mind with Luke. Good follow on Twitter.
Hey, Bob, would you have rather watched the punt, pass, and kick competition with Andy Reid when he was 13 years old?
We were just watching that.
Or the pay-per-view of the fights over the weekend? How did those turn out?
They were dumb. Really, really dumb.
The good news is Ocho Cinco got knocked out.
He got knocked down. Yeah, he got knocked down. It was dumb. I don't know if anybody paid for that. I did not, but I did see it. It was really, really awful. It was really, really awful on all levels. The commentary from Desus and Mero, who are two comedians who have a show on Showtime.
Oh, yeah.
They were commentators and trying to be funny, and at times they were funny, but for the most part, wasn't great. And
it's
then,
not really what you want at that point.
Nah, not really.
Watching that.
Not really. So they had two spectacles sandwiching two legit boxing matches in between. Opened with Chad Ochocinco fighting a guy I've never heard of who apparently had some experience as an MMA fighter. He fought in bare knuckle, and then he fought in boxing. So I'm like, all right, at least the guy's got experience. I think he was winless. And then once I saw him throw a few punches, I understood why he was winless, because he had no talent whatsoever. And Ochocinco moved okay for a guy that's not a boxer, and he's 40-some years old, looked in great shape, and then got clipped by a punch that didn't look like it was that big of a punch, but he kind of went face down into the canvas and got back up and seemed appreciative of the effort and the fun and all that. And then you had Floyd Mayweather fighting Logan Paul, who's, outweighed him by 50 pounds. He's, you know, over 6 feet tall. Floyd's 5'7" at best. I know he's listed at 5'8", 155. The other guy came in at 190.
And how did Logan Paul come into existence? Is he
these are YouTubers, him and his brother. I honestly don't know what made them famous on YouTube. Like, what, I don't know if they were pranksters or if they did, I don't know what they did to become as big as they are. But now they're in everybody's consciousness, and they've both got boxing careers, and I give him credit for, you know, finagling his way into a payday like that. They're going to walk away with millions upon millions, the both of them, for an 8-round exhibition that was just dumb and boring. Mm. It was really, really awful. And I don't know if anybody out there actually paid the $50 for it, but if you did, I'm sorry.
Do you think this is going to get any traction going forward, or is this the one that's like, okay, no more of these? Because we've seen a few of these.
You paid for this, I would hope you would walk away going, okay, I did it the one time, you got me, I'm not doing it again.
Right.
I would hope that's the case. But his brother is going to be fighting a guy who's a former UFC welterweight champion in Tyron Woodley in a boxing match. So that's coming up in, I don't know, in a couple months perhaps. I can't remember the date. But
you'll also watch it and not pay for it.
Exactly, yes. Right. Yeah.
You have your principles.
I feel like I got ripped off with the time I spent watching it. I didn't pay anything for it, but, you know, the time, I was like, this is just the dumbest, most non-event ever. It was lame. So, but you had people out there like Michael Irvin's out there and Terrell Owens out there and, you know, Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson. You had these, you know, athlete celebrities that were all out there watching. Mm. And it was just...
Was it in L.A.? Or?
It was in Florida at the Hard Rock, where the Dolphins play. What is that, the Hard Rock Stadium or whatever that is? Yeah. Was out there, and it started raining at one point.
Oh, jeez.
You know, they had to stop. They halted one of the fights so they could wipe off the canvas because they've got all those logos on there, and it gets very slick.
Right.
You know, fighters were slipping and stuff, so they had to wipe it off. So, yeah, it was a non-event. You know, good for them. They made money, but it was just lame. And I hope it stops.
Yeah.
I hope it stops. It's really not that appealing.
Well, the good news is you didn't pay any money.
That's
for it,
exactly so. Right. As I was trying to text Danny, because Danny was saying, I'm in on all this. He loves it. And then... I don't think he did pay for it. At least he's not admitting it. Yeah. Speaking of admission, we had our guy on from, and I always forget his name, from San Diego, play-by-play guy. You remember his name.
Agler.
Jesse.
Jesse Agler.
All right, between the two of us, we got it. and he talked when we, and what was that, 3 weeks ago or so, month almost?
For the Padres series.
Yeah, and he talked about, you know, we were just talking about offense really, really struggling in baseball, and is it because of sabermetrics and the approach changing and nobody fears the strike, all that. And he agreed with that, but also said in his mind the biggest thing that needed to be addressed was the foreign substances being used by pitchers and stuff actually created specifically to increase spin rate, not just using some sunscreen and mixing it with rosin like guys are known to do. This is like taking the next step. And now we're seeing the crackdown. We're seeing, you know, Trevor Bauer's a guy who's called out Major League Baseball about it over the years and, you know, talking about they need to enforce it. And then last year, you know, he had career low numbers, a Cy Young Award winner. And now in his first start since Major League Baseball announced they are going to strictly enforce this by checking baseballs, his spin rate on fastballs dropped by over 223 rotations per minute, much more than the normal range, and he got lit up a bit, and he was asked about it after the game and sort of said, yeah, maybe it has something to do with it. Wouldn't acknowledge it completely, but I mean, it's kind of the dirty secret that everybody's aware of, and you're seeing, is this the first star pitcher we're seeing who's pitching clean, if you will? I mean, it's interesting to see how this is really, since we've had that conversation, really sort of blown up in terms of stories online and guys talking about it. I heard them talking about it on MLB Network this morning. Everybody's saying, well, they're the propaganda partner. They'll never they were talking about it.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting to see, was it a bad outing? Is it a coincidence? Or is that just the natural version of that pitcher that we're seeing without the chemical enhancement that is different than the other chemical enhancements of the past?
Well, it's amazing. I mean, it's pretty stark, the number, 223 rotations per minute. Less. That's how much it dropped by. And yeah, I mean, this all came up, and I remember a few weeks ago, that was on the heels of, I believe, the weekend series with the Padres 2 or 3 days before that, because I remember it was my fifth trip to the tire shop to get my left rear tire fixed.
The world's most problematic slow leak.
Yes. I was sitting there reading in their lobby, their lovely lobby there, you know, about the sixth no-hitter that took place, you know, at that during that week. And, you know, it was just all of a sudden that's all they were talking about in baseball, strikeouts over or outweighing hits, and, you know, for the last 3 years. And yeah, it's been a big deal. But I mean, when that came up, because we were talking about moving the mound, you know, talking about, you know, moving it back a foot, lowering it, all these other things. This is by far the most, and I would say it's a pretty close second to the cheating, you know, that went on down in Houston.
Yeah.
With the buzzer, knowing, you know, what, whether a fastball or a curveball or a changeup was coming. You know, now you've got pitchers that, I mean, and obviously it was having some kind of effect. So, I mean, I would think that Major League Baseball should work really hard to get this done. But something makes me think that, because you've been watching, I mean, is there anything you see pitchers doing that looks suspicious? I mean, I've been kind of trying to look for it, but there's nothing.
You know, I told you I was watching MLB Network this morning. They had Ken Rosenthal on and somebody else, and they were talking about how this is known. Like, it's the dirty secret that everybody is, it's not a secret. And they were talking about how they've got a book on every pitcher who essentially they know when he's going there. Like, oh, this guy likes to go to his belt. This guy likes to go to the back of the hat, adjust the hat. Mm. This guy has it on his neck. This, like, they've got, you know, cameras, all these things that sort of tell them who's doing it and how they do it. It's wow. Amazing that they've got everybody dialed. This guy's got it on his belt loops and blah. It was amazing to hear that conversation going on. And now they're starting to crack down, according to a texter, 360, saying Garrett Cole and Kenley Jensen, both of those guys' spin rates were way down this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the crackdown wasn't just Bauer, and, you know, they'll be doing it for everybody. But we'll see how much offense picks up, how much pitching struggles now that this is in place, and that they're cracking down on it. But it's pretty interesting to see how that's, it is really caught fire.
Well, it's kind of funny because they always talk about, like, the service time thing and how that's a dirty little secret that nobody talks about. But, I mean, this is a directly affects the game and the numbers. So I would think that the crackdown would be a little bit more harsh. But I'm sure that, like you said, they probably have cameras that are just on the pitcher, you know, at Major League Baseball headquarters. And
they got scouting reports. They know how they're doing it.
Seems like it should be pretty easy to detect, but maybe not.
We'll hear more about what Major League Baseball is planning to do about the substances that are going on with pitchers when we sweep the dial, coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
So we have OTAs and we have mandatory mini camps, and the Packers are one of these teams that they have the offseason bonuses put into the contract. But Jeff Darlington says, you know, don't expect Aaron Rodgers there yet. It's going to get really costly, though. He might expect something to happen when training camp starts because of how expensive it could be for Aaron Rodgers.
It's training camp for me that becomes the real trigger point, because one thing we should point out about the new CBA is that he'll get fined $50,000 a day for training camp. And it used to be that if you held out, you guys would, you know, kumbaya at the end of the holdout and forgive the missed days and those fines. You can't do that anymore. The CBA makes it so that you literally have to keep that fine imposed. It's mandatory. So 10 days of training camp is $500,000, and that doesn't even get you the first preseason game. So this is a real thing when training camp hits in terms of finable money. To me, that becomes sort of the point where these two sides have to say, okay, are we going to find a way to make this work, or is it true? Is this real? Do we really need to send Aaron Rodgers elsewhere?
So is $500,000 enough to lure him back if he's just done with this franchise? Because in his world, again, I know it's easy for us to throw away other people's money, but considering how much he's made and will continue to make, does he look at $500,000 and say, well, I don't want to be here any longer. I've got no intention of being here, but I can't afford to lose that $500,000. So I'm going to go ahead and show up.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Don't
if
think
you're
so
that
either.
Committed, I mean, I think that's interesting. I did not know that, because he's right. Usually that will happen where they'll forgive and forget. Okay, we'll pay.
Didn't
we're not
do that
take
with Marshawn.
I want to say it was there was something with Cam Chancellor when
he missed the first two games that one year. But I thought Marshawn, when he re-signed,
yeah,
that was the day
been.
We saw him around the facility, and Groz was taking a picture of him and he's flipping us off.
Yeah. But I remember with Cam for sure that there was some fines that, you know, were from camp, and you know,
they forgave
him. Point, and they forgave it. So, but now you can't. So this will happen. So, I mean, to me, the way he sounds and the way that he's acting and behaving and everything, I feel like he's committed to this. And you know, what's $500,000? What's he making? Is it 35, 40 mil? Something
somewhere
like
in that neighborhood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, Derek Mason was on some shows this morning on our ESPN affiliates, or on, you know, main ESPN radio, and former Titans receiver, so he has some things to say about the Titans. And he weighed in saying Julio Jones hasn't really changed the offense. He's just going to make them a lot better at everything they already do.
I think he fits well. If you look at what they did last year with A.J. Brown, he's becoming one of the best receivers, period, in the National Football League. And then having Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith, so they were able to do a lot of things because of Derrick Henry in a play-action game. I think they're going to be able to do the same things. I don't think they are going to pass no more than what they did last year. But I think you're going to see a lot more deep plays down the field because of Julio Jones.
Oh, it's Jonnu Smith. I heard somebody call him Juno earlier.
I heard someone called Julio Jones.
It's the same person. Juno and Julio. Well, Lefko, what do you think? Does he change? I mean, you watch that offense more than any of us do. You're a Titans fan. You're a Titans honk. So do you think he just slides in? It's kind of the same thing they've been doing?
I think he's a better Corey Davis. And with Corey Davis last year, they were pretty unstoppable. So I think they're going to be like that again. But kind of like the Seahawks. You know, I don't think offense was the problem, right? They're good. They have so many receivers. It could certainly help. But when it gets down to it in the playoffs, right, do you want that good defense or do you want the powerhouse offense?
Well,
so it'll be fun. But
not great. They lost Malcolm Butler, who was their leading interception guy, to Arizona. I love watching A.J. Brown play, man. That guy,
he's a beast.
He might be more fun to watch than DK Metcalf. Sorry, DK. But, yeah, he just runs through tackles. And he has fully realized, I guess I had to look at the numbers. Derrick Henry, he averaged 5.4 yards per carry. And that wasn't just on, you know, 25, 30 carries. This is 378 carries.
Is he a guy we're going to talk about? I mean, he is a battering ram. He is a physical back. Are the tires going to go flat, like, quickly? Is he going to be one of those guys that just the production gets cut in half, the wear and tear? I mean, he's so physical. And he's also one of those guys we talk about with tight ends, where you watch him run, and you're going, they don't look that fast, but they're blowing by guys. He doesn't.
It's true.
He doesn't look like a burner at all, but you see him blowing by guys. The way he runs, maybe his stature doesn't appear fast, but he's always – he's outrunning everybody.
Yeah. Well, you just have the comfort of knowing that you just hand the ball off to him twice and you're going to get a first down on average.
Pretty cool.
Sweeping the dial.
Okay, so here's Buster Olney kind of weighing in on what we just touched on last segment, that this crackdown could really happen in earnest beginning as soon as next week.
And guys, this is going to be a huge deal, and it could start as soon as a week from today. The union is in concert with this. There have been conversations with Major League Baseball, the union, the umpires. There was a conference call on Friday. Memo's going to go out to teams probably later in the week, and the orders will go to the umpires to enforce a rule that's already on the books, and it is going to, it is going to be remarkable to watch.
Boy, there's some urgency behind this.
No kidding. Yeah, the union in on it too. I mean, if they look once, I mean, this is all about sales, you know, and if you're seeing things that are because of cheating, I mean, that they're going to fix it quickly, because there was already the big backlash from the Houston Astros. But now all of a sudden, I guess we're going to see balls flying out of the park, Bob. We're going to see more offense. It'll be interesting if there's not one more no hitter the rest of the season.
Yeah.
How interesting when you start off at a record pace by far. 6 and, you know, in what, the first couple months.
Yeah. I think what were we around a 40 game mark at that time, something like that, 45 games, somewhere in that neighborhood. The one guy who probably hates hearing this is Jared Kelnick going, "Oh, so now they're going to stop that and I get sent down? Great." Great.
Well, hopefully it'll still be enforced in 30 games when he comes back.
I would certainly hope so. Hopefully they're not going, "Well, we'll look at it for a week or two, see how it goes." But it's really interesting how much urgency is behind this story now. And it's become really, really front and center.
How weird is that for us? We were talking about it for weeks.
Yeah.
We talked to the San Diego, Jesse Agler, the San Diego Padres play-by-play guy. He brings it up for the first time in forever.
He got the name right on the first try.
Jesse Agler.
I was proud of that. Yeah.
Dave's usually the one that remembers that one. I'm the one that always forgets his name.
We put it together last
time. Yeah, we chipped
in. I like that teamwork.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, this happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up, Luke Arkins of Prospect Insider will join us next, talking Mariner baseball here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.